Good morning and thanks for attending. As I said in my earlier pitch, this session is about taking sides. When it comes to hedge funds, there's one person that you do want in your team, and that's Patrick Toohey. Patrick joined HSBC in 2004 as the Asian head of alternative funds. He's got something like 27 years experience in the industry and 11 directly with hedge funds. He has an overall investment responsibility for the hedge fund platform in Asia.
Good morning. We're a little bit light on the ground, but we'll do our best to entertain you over the next 35 minutes or so. Thank you very much for finding the time. Jason, thanks. The great thing about being Irish, actually, is that you always have two teams to support, as you know. It's Ireland and anyone playing England. So I guess it's a little bit like being here with the Kiwis. So, yeah, we've got a bit in common. My presentation today is, we probably should have changed the title of it because it maybe misleads. I think what we want to focus on is where funds, the whole fund industry is headed, but what that actually means in terms of hedge funds and how we're actually going to offer them to clients. And I guess I've seen this convergence going on over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's really picked up some pace now. And I think there's a lot of issues that it brings together. So I'm hoping by the end of it, we'll have some good questions, and I'll leave you with some thought-provoking ideas. But I think for all of us in the room, our daily activity is pretty simple, really. We're in the business of making money for our clients. And all of the things that have driven the changes in the investment industry over the last 20 years have basically been client-driven. Because at the end of the day, the client always wants the maximum return for the minimum amount of risk. And the changes that we've seen in terms of product construction have really been driven by those client demands. So the sort of the two investment teams that exist globally, the alternative guys and the traditional guys, what we've actually seen is them responding in different ways to these challenges from clients. And what we've now actually seen is a crossover, and I think 130-30 funds is really the crossing point for hedge funds and traditional funds. And there's very little, I think, to distinguish the markets today. And I think in the next 10 years, there'll be nothing to distinguish the markets other than the liquidity that the clients demand and the amount of market exposure or alpha that they want as an alternative. So I hope over the period we can take you to where that journey is going to finish and leave you with some thoughts. So in terms of the content, we're going to look at the past very, very briefly, bring ourselves up to speed in terms of what's gone on there, the present, and what is absolute return. We talk about it a lot. And then the future, I think I'd like to paint a picture as to where I see portfolio offerings being in terms of the products that we'll actually have for clients. If we look at the past and we look at the growth of the mutual fund industry, it's fair to say from this graph that the industry has plateaued. And if we go back, this AUM number of 10 trillion, 10.4 trillion, if you add in the growth and the return from global markets over the last 3 or 4 years, you can see there's actually been an erosion in the value of money that's in mutual funds, and certainly the number of new investment fund businesses that have started up has sort of plateaued. And there's a number of reasons for that. I think the bear market of 2000, 2002 really shook a lot of complacency out of the market, and I'm pleased, or I fear, it really depends on how I feel, that we're actually in another environment where people will take a step back, and no one wants relative returns unless they're going up, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So the mutual fund industry has plateaued. In part, I think it's some of the slack has been picked up by the indexed market for equities and the exchange-traded market. And I think that, again, is client pressure. At the end of the day, the client's saying, well, look, I'm not going to pay you 1% to be in an actively managed fund if you can only give me the indexed returns. And a computer can do it for me for 10 basis points. So that's where I go. I think if you add ETFs into this, it takes you up to about 1.2 trillion. So getting on somewhere near the hedge fund universe. But you see the growth here has been quite dynamic. And then the growth in hedge funds, which is well documented and I think sometimes overstated. And what you'll see here, and it depends on who you read, but about 1.5 to 1.7 trillion seems to be about the number. And there's about 10,000 funds today. That number really obscures things because of that 10,000, the biggest growth has actually been in fund of funds. and they get roped into this number. So in terms of true hedge funds, there has been growth, but it hasn't been the sort of growth that these numbers would lead you to that conclusion. And I think this sort of this crossover has come for two reasons. With the bear market of 2000-2002, a lot of the really talented managers who were in the active space, A, they could see they were losing money to index funds really through no fault of their own because they were constrained in terms of what they could do, and B, they could see the amount of money that some of the hedge fund managers were making. So it was quite logical that we had this exodus of talent from the active long-only world into the hedge fund world, and I think it'll be interesting to see if there's any people that go back now as a result of the development of the 130-30 funds, which I'll talk about a little bit later. So I think in history what we would say is that the only thing that's really changed in the battle lines is that hedge funds have now become an accepted part of the community. And in fact, it's that acceptance and that commoditization of the hedge funds which actually has been one of the reasons why we're having this discussion on liquidity versus alpha, because I think there's probably some people in the room, or certainly people in Sydney that I've met this week, that are not so enamored with the returns they've made from their hedge funds or their hedge funder funds, and I think there's a number of reasons for that. So if we fast forward to the present, just to give you a sort of a snapshot, this is from the Deutsche survey, which they do every year, which is very, very good. You basically see that around 30% of the registered investors in hedge funds today are actually of an institutional nature, whether they be governments, insurance companies, pension funds, corporations, endowments, or foundations. So the foundations and the endowments have always been the backbone of the hedge fund investor base, that the Yales and the Harvard endowments of this world. The interesting statistic, I guess, is 5 years ago, over 50% of the investors in hedge funds were actually family offices and high net worth. And today, roughly 50% is fund of funds. And those fund of funds, in turn, are invested in probably an equal split, if we look at our business mix anyway, an equal split of private clients and institutions. And I think that's pretty much the same across the space. Some people are more institutionally focused. Some fund of funds are more retail focused. And I think it comes out in the wash at about 50-50. So you could argue that probably more than 50% of the money in hedge funds today is actually the investments of institutions. Now, that in itself has changed the whole landscape in terms of what hedge funds do. Because again, coming back to my initial point and change, the changes that have gone on have been driven by the clients. If your client base has changed, and today it's more institutional than it is private client, the institutions are focused on LIBOR plus returns. They're looking for cash plus 3. The more aggressive, the Korean insurance companies are looking for cash plus 5. The Japanese insurance companies are looking for cash plus 1. So you have a broad range of expectations. But one thing they are looking for is low volatility, and they're also very, very focused on diversification. So if you like, the rules have changed for a fund of funds in terms of what they do. And because of the nature of what they are, there's a public fund. It's a multi-manager, multi-strategy fund. Today, 50% of its shareholders really want the investment objectives changed, and that's sort of what's happened. So I think some of the, I don't want to really use the word disillusionment, but some of the disappointment that private clients have had with hedge funds and fund of funds are largely driven by the fact there's been a sea shift in terms of what they were designed to do. And certainly what we see at HSBC is that the old guard, the family offices and the high net worth individuals, they don't buy fund of funds anymore. They want to buy individual funds, and they go out and they're far more aggressive, and they do it in that shape and form. So the fund of funds industry, I think, has grown up dramatically because there was a need, but I think it's also changed the dynamics of the number of people that have come into it have changed the dynamics in terms of the institutionalization of it. Now, this might be sort of stating the obvious, but when I look around and within HSBC, we've got a fair range of different investment teams. The guys that are always the interesting ones to talk to and to spend some time with and that are the guys from the private equity businesses, be it in Asia or Europe or in North America. And I would have to say in my 27 years of investing that the private equity guys, they are the king of the jungle. And there's been a hell of a lot written over the last year about their $1 million-plus parties and whether they should be paying more tax and the structures. And that was pretty much the case 10 years ago and 10 years before that, and it will be the same in 10 years' time, because there is a lot of professional jealousy, I believe. But these guys have consistently delivered. And I'm talking now about the top echelon, because there is a dispersion between the top guys and the bottom guys. Okay, so capacity and the ability to get into the top guys is paramount. But if you look at their returns over the last 20 years, you'll actually see that, and these numbers are the internal rate of returns for a commitment to a fund, and we've basically got a two-year look back. So what I'm trying to say is that the guys, we're only going back to 2004, because any private equity funds that came out with a vintage of 2005, there's just not been sufficient activity or time for us to have any meaningful statistics on what they've done. But those red bars are the top quartile. We're not talking about top decile, top quartile of funds. And the rather complicated squiggles represent the return from the local index and the S&P 500, which you see has clearly had some seriously negative months, negative years rather, and basically underperformed by a multiple of what they've done in private equity. Now, the reason for that is very, very simple. I think private equity has the benefit of being able to take an active approach to what it does. At the end of the day, the private equity guys, I was told once by a young bloke who owned a franchise for Domino's Pizzas in New York. He was about 30 years old, was worth about $1 billion selling pizzas. And he told me that you only ever meet three types of people in life. You meet those that make it happen, those who watch it happen, and those who wonder what happened. And he said, basically, you don't want to be in category C, and if you could be in category A, that's great. And I think in the investment world, these guys are in category A. They make it happen. And when we get into this very high-level intellectual discussion about alpha, the reality is alpha is about an individual's ability to deliver a positive return regardless of what the market's doing. Would everybody agree with that broadly? That is alpha. And to me, the purest form of alpha is private equity, because these guys are adding value to the stock price of something through their own efforts and engineering. It's entirely at the skill of these individuals rather than the market. Now, the time that they exit will obviously influence the profit that they make if they float something or it's a trade sale. So there's an element of that, but they have control over that timing. And these returns take into account a number of different business cycles. So I really do rank these guys as the king of the jungle. And where I'm going to take this is the style of management, I think, is now transcending down into public equity through activist funds and event-driven hedge funds. And I want to talk about that a little bit in a second. So where it's sort of taken us in hedge fund world is there's been this bifurcation in terms of where we've gone. On the left-hand side, as I'm looking at it, we've got the liquidity-driven managers, and on the far side, the alpha-focused managers. Now, this commoditization of hedge funds led to a massive spring-up of indices in the late 90s and early 2000, and the best business to be in was to be an index provider. Why so? Why would you want to be an index provider in an industry that's meant to be not constrained by benchmarks? So you're sort of bringing in something that was never meant to be. And the reason was we had people new to the industry as investors, and they wanted it to look a little bit more like traditional world. So the index was a way that you could measure whether you're actually getting something that was within market from a peer group perspective. It also removed the hardest part of our job, which is the due diligence and research that you do on every individual manager that you put in a portfolio. So if you could look at an index and say it's up 8% in the year, you didn't have to fly all around the world and do on-site visits with 35 hedge funds. You just basically could look at the index and say that was where we were. So we then had the next sort of stage, I guess, in the development was then the investable index and the index tracking fund. And again, I think here, this is where the hedge fund industry has changed, the dynamics have changed, that a lot of people have got into the business now who are in the business of marketing rather than hedge fund managers who are in the business of managing money and making money. And I've always said the difference between the hedge fund world and traditional world is in the traditional world people invest money, and in the hedge fund world people try to make money. And I think there is a difference between the two. And what we've basically seen with the growth of the fund of funds industry and this commoditization is that we've tried to make the whole thing look a little bit more like a traditional asset. So what have we done? We've introduced indices. What have we then done? We've introduced trackers. What have we then done? We've tried to introduce daily liquidity. For really square pegs in round holes, these assets were never really designed to do this. And I think the growth of the index funds is interesting, and I think that the next phase of that, possibly, but it could die very quickly, is the growth of the replicator funds that we're now seeing produce, the algorithms that provide you with hedge fund beta, which I think has to be an oxymoron somewhere, but hedge fund beta. And I think the biggest drawback in the index products is the fact that you are limited to managers who will go on a platform and managers who are open. If we look at the returns, and we look at the returns from our portfolios and do attribution, we would say a significant portion comes from the managers that we invest in who are either hard-closed or soft-closed but continue to give us access and capacity. So I think that there's a natural selection bias in index funds towards managers who are looking to raise money versus managers who want to be on a who are able to raise money. If you're a good hedge fund today, you don't have to find investors. 10 years ago, that was a challenge. 10 years, you know, 10 years on, hedge funds are trying to avoid investors, and I think that's probably the biggest trap that the index fund falls into, is there's a natural selection bias against the closed or semi-closed names because they won't go on a platform. Now, where I see some light, I guess, at the end of that tunnel is taking a traditional fund of funds product that's got some closed managers in there, some soft closed managers in there, and a proper normal blend and actively managed fund of funds, and listing it on a stock exchange. And that's now been very big business in the UK. I know that Ellerston, as a local hedge fund, have done that here in Australia, and I think there's other products that are now wrapped around London listed. And London is really setting its stall out, trying to compete with Switzerland, with Zurich, to be a market for these listed products. Now, what you're going to get in the listed product is you are going to get your daily liquidity, but you're going to get your daily liquidity manufactured by the market. And supply and demand means that the NAV will somewhat be an irrelevance in terms of what you get. It will be the number of buyers versus sellers. So I think these ETFs in the hedge fund space have got a little way to go. I think there's a maturity of that market that's got to come so that the volume's there. But what I do see is a number of products, and we're no different to other people that are in that space that have discount mechanisms. So there is a buyback at NAV, but it's on normal hedge fund liquidity terms. And that sort of gives you a protection. I mean, closed-end funds tend to trade at a discount, I think we'd all agree. So if you can limit that discount into a range of, say, 3 to 4%, that's probably acceptable. And it probably gives you arbitrage opportunities to buy it if it does go to them. So on the liquidity side, it's really been driven by people wanting to satisfy the market. Now, just to sort of flick on, investable indices, just to sort of try and make the point I was making there, CSFB, I think, are a great organization, and I think the index work that they do is very, very credible. The HFR index, I think, is probably a broader, more diverse product in terms of the number of managers that it covers, but I think the methodology that CSFB employ, I think, is sound. What you'll see is this divergence in return. So their investable index lags their non-investable index, and that just reinforces the point I was making about the ability to allocate to closed funds. Yep. The other thing that's important to note is I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that CSFB didn't launch their investable product until late in 2005. So even though I get a five-year track record off the web, I think it's actually been a two-year product. So in fact, the line sort of starts somewhere down here. So you'll see there is quite a dispersion of a dispersion of return between the investable and the non-investable. But if I just hop back a second. So the alpha-focused, I guess, are really the old school of hedge funds. And what was a catalyst, I think, for really creating this divide was the SEC, as you recall, in 2004, 2005 in the US, tried to regulate the hedge fund industry by saying if you're a US-based advisor running a hedge fund, you had to register with the SEC unless you offered liquidity of 2 years or worse. In other words, if you looked like a private equity fund and clients were locked up for 2 years, you didn't have to register. So what do all the guys that don't want to register do? They change their liquidity, and all of a sudden they exclude, if you like, the less mature or less sophisticated investor. But it focused that whole group of managers that I would consider to be the true alpha generators. So the Carl Icahns of this world, the Nelson Peltz of this world, the people that have historically
not been thought of as hedge funds. They're thought of as financiers or global investors or whatever the media wants to call them on that day. But these are guys who have gone out over the years and had an influence in businesses, whether it be through bullying a board into doing something, whether it's been through removing a board, or whether it's, you know, Nelson Peltz is a far more cooperative, I say, rather than confrontational investor, where he's actually gone into businesses like Snapple and actually helped them change the way they market their business and as a result significantly driven up the share price. So we sort of had a group that was then added to with the event managers. Now, clearly the catalyst to this has been after the bear market of 2000 and 2002, there was just a ton of cash built up on corporate balance sheets. And the profitability growth that we've seen post that has also built up on balance sheets. And I don't know what the number is today, but about 2 months ago, there was $600 billion of cash sat on the balance sheets of the S&P 500 companies in the US. So what people like Peltz and ICANN have done is clearly gone and tried to unlock that, because you're not paying a public company to hold your cash. You can put your cash on deposit and not have to take any risk with it. So this whole merger mania, and this is what's driven the markets, and that's why I think we're at a very interesting stage, has been driven by people like this, the activists and the mergers, the merger managers, because they've been able to unlock this value that sat in there, that you just want the cash back. You want a special dividend, you want a share buyback, you want something that's going to enhance the value of your equity. So that's been good for us. And I think there's this distinct move now, these two directions of the hedge fund industry. Those that are sticking to the pure principle of, we're a hedge fund, our liquidity is quarterly or 6 monthly because it takes us that long to turn a business round or to do a deal, versus those that want to be in the mainstream commoditized. And I guess the characteristics that we see when we get down, that is that the liquid side of the industry is offering very diversified portfolios, and they're offering it at low fees. So I guess, again, there's a natural gravitation towards the retail segment in terms of what clients think they're looking for, versus the alpha-focused guys that tend to be highly concentrated. You might find portfolios that have got less than 20 stocks in them. The fees are high, and they're less liquid. Typically, you're going to have a one-year lockup. You may have a three-year lockup, not uncommon, a rolling three-year lockup. Any combination of the above. And the decision I think that clients have been asked to make today is do you want to be in hedge funds proper, or do you want to be in this commoditized, liquid, more mutual fund looking business? And this was the whole presentation discussion of which side do you want to be on in terms of the liquidity trap. Now, where I think the market, this is just a slight digression, It's got very, very interesting, I think, and this is probably more for institutional investors, but the development of the 130-30 funds is really the admission, I guess, from the traditional world that actually being short stocks makes your portfolio more efficient. And if you're benchmark constrained and you've got a stock in there that you believe should be a lower weighting, you can now amplify that view. You can actually make that stock a much lower weighting in your portfolio, i.e. make it a negative weighting in your portfolio by being short. And what these funds have done is they've basically been able to maintain the tracking error, which is the measurement of these guys against whatever appropriate index you want, but they've significantly increased the alpha. So I think for those clients that want to be in traditional equities and they want daily liquidity, but they want a slightly bigger bang for their buck than just the index, which they can now go and buy for 10 basis points, I think the 130-30 funds really have a role to play. And you know, the intention of this presentation is trying to be somewhat balanced in terms of where we see things and what we agree with and we don't agree with. So I think the 130-30 funds, they won't be part of our product offering, I think, ever. But I really think it's something, I'm not sure how big it is in Australia to date. I know some of the institutions have been looking at it. The consultants are sort of all over it. And most people sort of get it. I think what we will see if we're looking 5 years down the track is it will become more efficient. The 130-30 is a little bit like the discussion today is where do we get to on 60-40 as an allocation for a balanced fund. I think if you look at funds in the paper at the moment like Renaissance, who are probably mathematically smarter than most investment managers, they're at 175-75. On their US product, and I don't think that's by accident. I don't think they ended up there just because it seemed like a nice round number. So I think the 130-30 funds are definitely here to stay. I think what they will do, though, is they will cannibalize the existing global active equity funds. So I think guys who are out there running active equity, if they're thematic or whatever, I think these guys will definitely clean up. So the future, what does it look like? Well, I think the future is really quite simple. I think that we are going to have a range of products in 5 to 10 years' time that are just called funds. And clients won't be too worried. The demarcation lines of whether they're hedge funds or they're mutual funds or they're 130-30 funds, I think will largely be in irrelevance. And I think what clients will look at is the whole liquidity management and how much return they want. Because I think at the end of the day, the dynamics of private equity being the top returning asset class is not going to change. I think the dynamics of the ICANs and people of that nature driving returns out of hedge funds and being the best performing hedge funds is not going to change. But I think what we are going to see is that fund of funds sort of become a little bit of a, you know, do we really need them if we can buy these products and we can buy an index product, put it together, end up with the same sort of liquidity profile. And I think the great news for yourselves in the room is that this will be the value-added proposition that you'll be taking to your clients. And it won't be trying to find the right asset allocation. It will be more about liquidity management. And I think that right now, my sense in Australia is that a lot of the decisions that are based on liquidity are driven by the constraints of the systems that we work with in terms of the platforms and how those things actually work. So they're sort of more administrative problems than they are investment related. And, you know, I guess in short, if you want to make double digit, you want to make mid-teen returns, making them from a daily traded fund of funds is going to be really quite difficult. And I think if you want independent alpha, then you're going to be looking at something where the manager is actually adding value and it's that skill set. Now, again, we talk about portable alphas, this is going to be the great invention. And I'm pretty sure that in 5 or 10 years' time, we'll have found a way to have securitized private equity and to capture all that upside. And I've seen some structured products that have attempted to do it to date. I don't think necessarily very successfully. But there'll certainly be a way that there will be options on these funds that will allow you to completely remove market risk. The reality is that if your liquidity time frame is pushed out to quarterly or 6 monthly, that really volatility just becomes, you know, less of an issue. So people look at it from a risk perspective in a very, very different way. So I think the advice that clients will be looking for will be very much driven by that. Now, in terms of us, just to wrap up, we're in the process of bringing our team to Australia. We hope to have all of the bits and pieces with the regulators sorted in the very, very near future. Our position on this is that we are an active hedge fund manager in terms of allocation, and we're very much in the alpha camp and not the liquid camp, although we think there are ways that we can satisfy that. And at $45 billion, we rank somewhere in the top 3 to 5 of hedge fund advisors globally. Obviously, you've got businesses down here already, like the Mighty Man Group, who are everybody's man in front that you're chasing. But never best to be number one, I believe. Number two or three, you've got something to aim for. So that's the idea. And you know, we very much look forward to having the opportunity to talk with you either later or maybe sometime in the future when we're set up. I'm very happy to take questions or comments, observations.